Hello, welcome to Splinters. This is Gary Rogowski. Thank you for joining me, and thank you to Ashley for joining me as well. Hi.
Happy to be here, Gary. Thank you.
Shallowcreekwoodcraft.com. Is that right?
Yep, that's where you can find me.
Yeah, please check that out. We're here to engage today in another Q&A. It seems that more questions have been piling up, and then I opened up the file and I went, oh my goodness, we got a lot to talk about. Let's get one of the questions.
Hi, Gary. I have been working on setting up our shop after the class we had. Some people online recommended using the carbon method product to treat the surfaces of their tools, like their table saw, band saw, jointer, and planer. Others use BowShield T9. The carbon method is considerably more expensive, but is considered to last longer. In our dry California environment, rust is not an issue, but I've noticed that the table saw surface has various buildups and spots with more friction from the previous users. I can work on these with a sanding block or something, but is it worth using one of these products after? Thank you for your time, Brother Nathan.
I find it fascinating that there are all these products that spring up that are going to make all the difference. I looked it up, $89 a bottle. It's not something for woodworkers, I don't think. This Bowie Shield. I think it's probably just WD-40 under a different name, but the same idea. I wrote Nathan back and said it should be renamed instead of the Carbon Coating Kit. It should be renamed as hand in your pocket, but I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. What do you use, Ash, for treating your metals, machinery surfaces, your
I
cast iron?
still have a couple tins of Johnson's paste wax.
Oh, okay.
I know that I'm in the minority of having those left now, and they've become a hot commodity amongst people trading half tins and such.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I just try to make sure that I'm reducing dust that's left behind on my tools. I think that's a good maintenance tip, not leaving, residual dust laying around to create those rust spots. I use a gray Scotch-Brite, I think, is what's recommended from SawStop for their maintenance on their top. So I'll clean it up with that a little bit here and there if there happens to be anything, and then I just try to put coats of paste wax just to keep the friction down when it needs it. And I've been avoiding rust in, southern Pennsylvania humidity.
Yeah. Well, I picked this tip up a long time ago and it's always worked great. I had moved back to the last studio, giant barn, and we had a basement that was as large. So I had a 5,000 square foot basement. And in that shop, my tools rusted. I'd never had a problem with tools rusting, but in that shop, they rusted, little spots, not bad. And the only thing I could figure is that we were over rivers flowing to the main river close by. We were pretty close to the river. So, but I put a joiner and a planer in the basement and treated those surfaces with, wait for it, talcum powder.
Interesting.
Talcum powder works great, baby powder. Yeah, okay, it's cancer causing, so's everything else. So's being alive. But talcum powder works great because cast iron is very porous. And so you just, take a blackboard eraser and push it into the pores, wipe off the excess. You got your coating, it absorbs moisture. It's a little bit of lubrication, but not too much. I think it works great. Now, I used to wax my insert table on my planer. And what I found is that, and you're smart, you're removing the dust. I would never remove the dust. And so the wax would just collect a lot of dirt and dust. And so I'd have to clean all that off. So I would just, a word of caution with wax is you don't want too much on there. You want to really buff it off and be prepared. Phil Lowe used to come to town and teach class, and he would wax my joiner table every time. And all of a sudden I'm just, whoa. Whoa, this is fast.
Yeah, that is true. The first couple passes after you put wax
Whoa.
on, you're gliding across there at mock
Yeah,
speed.
it's fast. But you do have to keep the surface clean, and wax will do a really good job of lubricating and collecting dust. So
That's true.
now I had a have a story when I was moving up here to Lyle. I decided to move my old Powermatic table saw up here, and I got it into the back of my pickup truck. I covered it up with a tarp. I think it was probably March or April, so there was a chance of rain, and it did rain that night. I didn't think anything of it. I knew I had buttoned it up just right. It was just right. No water was going to get inside, and I drove it up here and got it inside the shop and took off the tarp. And there was rust all over the surface. I was like, what? Well, I'd created this rain cloud because of the, I don't know, I need a physicist here. The difference in temperature, I had lots of condensation inside the tarp.
Harp,
And I had created this little rain cloud inside the tarp. And
A
so I had
terrarium over
spots.
your jointer.
That was very disappointing. All over this pristine surface. So I went and got this stuff called Barkeeper's Friend.
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah, works great. Water, there's a small abrasive in it, citric acid, oxalic acid to get the stain away, and then some fragrance and stuff. Brother Nathan in the note asks about sanding it. I'd be very careful about sanding surfaces, except with the finest of abrasives, and try some stain remover first. As long as the rust hasn't really started eating in, I just avoid the sanding. What grit is gray Scotch Brite?
It's pretty fine. I'm not sure offhand, but it's not. It's.
Yeah, or don't want to sand with coarse papers. 220 grit is coarse on cast iron. It's going to leave a mark. So now I have character on my table saw tabletop. So there are different approaches. I think it makes sense. You know, if you live, my student Ali used to live close to the ocean in Venice Beach, California, and his stuff would rust. You go, why? I go, well, you live next to the coast. You live next to the ocean. And so I actually keep a bottle of mineral oil around now, and I use that for all sorts of stuff. I use it as a finish for my spoons, and I put it on, you know, little spots of rust and take a little sandpaper and it's a lubricant. So whenever my clamps feel a little cranky, I just put some mineral oil on the threads and boom. You know, spin it in, spin it out, do it on my vices. But just don't go crazy with the. You don't have to buy carbon coating. Just my take.
I
All
agree.
right.
Gimmicky.
Yeah, I think so. There's just too much stuff out there that they just see us coming. They go, well, why don't I sell design and I'll sell you this jig for this or that? Or one of my students has a giant plastic tub to clean his bandsaw blades in. Special tub. Okay. They see him coming and he loves it. He loves buying this stuff. And so let's have the next question.
Okay, next question. I was hoping a wood expert could help with this recent dilemma regarding shelves in a walk-in closet. I can't seem to find any answers to best practices through YouTube videos or visiting various lumber stores. Even my contractor isn't sure. Dilemma. I built a quilt room with a walk-in closet to store all of my fabric. Shelves are currently made out of 3/4 inch particle board and melamine, and it is clear they cannot withstand the weight without putting in front supports every 24 inches. The span on most of the shelves is about 55 inches. I need easy access to fabric, etc., so adding in more supports hinders easy access and storage. I've looked at using cabinet slash furniture plywood or solid oak or I've looked at the possibility of free-floating shelves, but that may be impossible with a 24-inch deep shelf and a 30-inch deep shelf. I don't see how an L-shaped brace adds anything since the shelves already are sitting on a wood strip. It's, I think, two issues. The shelf material needs to be more substantial, and the depth will require some sort of support. My questions are, which material will be substantial enough that can hold heavy items? What kind of span can I have with a more substantial board material? Is there a different method of support that I should consider? Here's a few pictures of the closet where you can see the sagging. Thank you for any and all information you can provide, Robin in Bandon, Oregon.
Well, I read this note and I sighed. It was a long sigh. Yeah, there's a real simple solution. Go get 2-inch yellow pine, southern yellow pine, and laminate it together and run that as you're shelving. I mean, people expect too much from wood. Wood has, every wood has a certain amount of bending resistance. And 3/4 inch plywood doesn't have much bending resistance over 55 inches. My goodness. I don't know what you do, Ash, but 36 inches is my limit for shelves. And even with that, I put in or put on, glue on banding strips that are thicker, taller than the 3/4 inch plywood, if that's what you're using. So maybe twice that size, 1.5 inches. So the shelf looks thicker, but it also has more bending strength. So if you take a 1x1, it has a certain amount of bending strength. If you take a 1x1 and put another 1x1 next to it, glue those together, now it's going to be twice as strong. It'll have twice the bending strength. But if you turn it on edge, so now it's 2 times taller rather than 2 times wider. If it's 2 times taller, that's 4 times stronger. That makes a big difference. So that's what you need is verticality. There are limitations in particle board and melamine. That's just particle board with a surface on top of it. You know, I wrote Robin and said, because she's a fiber artist, fiber does some things better than any other material we have. It makes great sails. Wood does not make for a great sail, but it makes for a nice sailboat. I read somewhere that the Vikings, it took as long to make the sails for their boats as it did to make the boats.
Huh.
That's pretty interesting.
It is.
So wood has limitations as far as bending strength, and you need to figure out how to, you know, if you want that 55 inches of clear span, then you need much thicker material and you need supports. You need supports underneath. Knee braces, L brackets every, you know, 18 inches or something. I mean, over that distance, you need help. If you can get at this is a built-in, so you can't get at the rear. Sometimes on a bookcase or something, you can screw in from the rear through the back to help support at least the rear of the shelf. But otherwise, you need some big banding strips or pieces underneath, and that cuts into your height. But it's wood. Ash, you got any thoughts on this?
There's this calculator that's free out there online. It's called the Sagulator, and you can input your material and your spans and all of that into it, and it gives you about where your clearances are before that material is going to start to bow, or basically those limitations for whatever those set of circumstances are. I find it helpful. It was mostly just fun to even think tank different things and put things in to see, where there's a failure point. But I mean, melamine is just so brittle. It's just once that starts to fail, it's done, So it's hard to really save that. I think with a material gets heavy, fiber gets heavy very quickly. So you're asking a lot from something like that. But yeah, I don't try to stretch those kind of spans out. If you have a way to support the back, like you were talking about, L brackets seem like the most efficient way to save what she already has present, besides replacing, like you said, with another material that's much more significant.
So if you have a knee brace, and what I mean by that is you have a right angle, two pieces that join together at a right angle, and then basically a triangle of wood. Make a triangle out of three pieces of wood. That would help. Obviously, it puts something in the way, but I think you just have to understand that there's limitations to what wood can do unless you make giant, really thick shelves.
Agreed. Yeah, that's a lot. Nothing's gonna at 3/4 of an inch is really gonna withstand that. I mean, oak is gonna hang in there better, but it's still not
Yeah, but
going to.
even over 36 inches, it's going to start to sag. And once you load it up with books or fabric or whatever, it needs help. Fiber does some things really well. Wood does some things really well. It's great in compression. Not great. I mean, it bends easy, and that's one of its
If you
nice
don't like
features.
straight shelves, it'll be great.
Yeah, right. If you want really bent shelves, oh golly, I have a piece of pine. I'll take a picture of it. And it bowed on me a long time ago, but I just keep it around because it's just, what happened to this thing? It's probably 4 feet long and it's bowed maybe a foot.
Yeah.
Crazy. And like,
I
well,
have a piece of pine, like, oh, I don't have it anymore, but I did too. We had 2x4s that were up in the rafters of our other barn, and we pulled them down thinking, oh, maybe some of this is salvageable. And the one we pulled down and it stopped pulling straight. And when we got it on the ground, it just looked like a gigantic boomerang. It looked like a 6-foot-long boomerang. I can't believe that that piece would bend like that without being steam bent. It was just such a hard curve for that wood naturally, but it did its thing hanging out in that rafter. It just went back to the shape it wanted to be.
It's astonishing what wood can do and how flexible it can be. But if you want rigidity, you have to think about other materials. Or, I mean, I suppose you could add steel strips, angle iron underneath. That might work, at particularly at the rear, but it's going to hang down a little bit. I suppose you could wrap the front edge with the angle iron, I suppose.
You have a blacksmith friend, maybe they can come up with some kind of ornamental-esque sort of supports and do something on the decorative side that would be nice to look at if it's the appearance of those sort of supports that they don't like.
So to just kind of wrap it up, knee braces of some sort, whether they're wood or metal, I would say at least 24 inches, and then thicker strips added to the 3/4 inch shelf to prevent that bowing. Those are your best bets.
Ready for the next one? Hi, I'm in the process of designing and building a standalone shop about the size of a one-car garage in my backyard. I'm thinking that it will be about 12 by 16. I've never built anything besides a summer stint as a laborer on a construction site, but I am an architect, so I figure it's time to learn how to build what I draw. I have a book on framing and a book on how to build a shed. So what could go wrong? First question is, if you were to build a shop no wider than 12 foot and no longer than 16 foot, how small could you go and still fit the basics of a table saw, miter saw, router, planer, jointer, hand tool bench, drill press, and bandsaw? Any magic proportions or clearances around a small shop? Is there one tool or table space that you'd center the layout around? I assumed it would be the table saw. Second question, I'm thinking of putting it up on blocks to avoid having to pour a foundation. If I build the floor solid enough and have enough supports under it, is there anything inherently wrong with having a shop up on blocks or piers? Maybe it's not a good idea because it'll be hard to get perfectly level, or maybe it'll bounce a little with the vibrations. Matt, Portland, Oregon. He's certainly a creative fella.
I liked working with architects when I was building a lot more work, because architects are trainable. You can point out to them, look, this isn't going to work, and here's why. So Matt is trying to build, or wants to build, it's 192 square feet. 192 square feet. And then there's the thickness of the walls, whatever his wall thickness is, at least 4 inches or maybe 6 inches. And so by the time it's done, it's a very small space. I have a 12-week course called Setting Up Shop. It'll start in January. Please go to the website, northwestwoodworking.com, and get some information on that. I'm just shaking my head because it's so hard to make a shop that size function with all the equipment that he mentions. I
I
just think
agree.
it's just almost impossible. I think that you need to establish flow in your shop by creating monuments. Like, my bench is a monument. I'm not going to move my bench. I know people who move their benches. I think that's too much effort, too much work. My bench stays where it's going to stay. My bandsaw stays where it's going to stay. My sharpening table. And those things stay where they're going to stay, and everything else moves around those tools. And then you start adding a joiner and a planer and a
Miter saw, router,
router.
hand tool
Oh, he's got a
bench, drill
table saw
press.
too.
Yeah, I would scrap that table saw so fast out of that list. There's no way, if you want any sort of assembly space, that you're gonna be able to fit a big giant table saw in there and have it be functional. And even if you were to get some sort of contractor saw, you're gonna be folding it up and moving it out and doing different things like that. And it's gonna be quite inconveniencing. I think with some combo machines, like a jointer planer combo, and a bandsaw, it would help give some more space, but yeah, it fills up very quick, and then you don't have space to build some of the things you want. So, depending on what he wants to build, I think that's a factor in those decisions too.
Well, that's, I think, the most important question. What do you want to build? And since he's so new at building, he doesn't really know. And so it's that chicken and egg thing. But if you know going in, well, I'm going to build the kitchen cabinets for my house, you need a table saw and you need a router. That's what you design your shop around. But you want to build furniture or picture frames or chairs, if you need a bench, you need a miter saw, you need a band saw. Maybe you need a shave horse. So it really does depend a lot on what you're going to be building. But yeah, I would avoid a table saw in a space that small. The other thing I would avoid is taking a look at everything you think you want to put into the shop and really ask yourself, am I going to use that in the next week, 2 weeks, 6 months, year? No, I'm looking at a pile of lumber right over there that should not be here. In my little shop, it shouldn't be here. There's no reason for it. I don't use it. But everything that you don't use on a regular basis shouldn't be in the shop. I think if you're going to build a shop, Matt, you also need to build a lumber storage area that's separate, because you need pieces of wood in the shop, don't get me wrong, but you don't need to store your lumber there until it's time to start building to acclimate it to the shop environment. But you can't use it for storage and a wood shop and your car. And your washing machine. Can't do it. Just can't do it.
He
Now,
didn't give us a height, I guess, creatively speaking. He didn't give us a height on how tall his space may be. So it's possible, he could come up with something for some elevated storage of some kind, but
but you don't want to store lumber up there.
no.
You can put the new shop I built has 10-foot ceilings. I can get 10 footers in there, but
That'd be nice. You don't hit lights with a board.
Exactly. But I can lean those up against the wall and take advantage of that vertical space above our heads. I mean, it's there. But if you start putting shelves up at that height, well, then you got to go up and get the stuff. It can be difficult. So I would avoid pier blocks as a choice for a foundation. You've got to level this thing somehow if you want that floor to be level. So I think a concrete foundation is the way to go, and the concrete floor, which you immediately cover up just as quickly as you can with strips of wood and rigid insulation and plywood over that. So you're not walking on the concrete. Concrete's great, but it's tough on you. It's tough on your tools. It soaks up moisture. It's cold in the winter. Nothing great about it. Uncovered, but covered it up. Yeah, it's not so bad. Yeah, this is a big question. Well, thanks very much for listening. These have been great questions. Please send in more. Love to answer them. Thank you, Ash, for joining me and helping out.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for listening to Splinters. I appreciate your support. Please check out our website, northwestwoodworking.com. And there are past episodes there and information about some of our online offerings. And send in those questions. All right, everyone. Take care. Adios.